IAEA says Iran has informed the agency of its decision to remove 27 of the UN watchdog's cameras from its nuclear sites. U.S. stocks sink ahead of a key report on soaring consumer prices that is expected to show another big jump in annual inflation. And another mass shooting in America. A gunman kills at least three people at a manufacturing plant in Maryland. Details just ahead. Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome to World News. In our top story, head of the International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran has informed the IAEA of its plans to disconnect 27 cameras of the agency's from its nuclear sites.
Basically, what we have been informed is that 27 cameras like this. You remember in December we were showing these cameras on a more auspicious time where we were reinstalling cameras. 27 cameras are being removed in Iran, apart from an online enrichment monitoring system that we have over there.
Rafael Grossi said Iran will remove all extra surveillance cameras installed under the 2015 deal. He said the presence of the cameras was beyond a comprehensive safeguards agreement. But according to Grossi, some 40 cameras which were installed under the safeguards issues will remain in place. Now, this after Iran switched off two of the agency's cameras, saying their activity was beyond its commitments under the safeguards accord. Head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization has slammed the UN nuclear watchdog for its anti-Iran stance, saying it is fully under the Israeli regime's influence. Mohammad Islami was reacting to his country's relations with the International Atomic Energy Agency and the latest anti-Tehran resolution adopted by its Board of Governors. He said Iran inked a deal with world powers and accepted restrictions on its peaceful nuclear program in order to build trust. He said the latest move at the IAEA's is contrary to Iran's goodwill gestures. Islami also expressed regret the agency's reputation is being thrown into question because it's being exploited by the Israeli regime. He added IAEA and other international bodies have become hostages to Zionists. And the Iranian president says Tehran stands firm on its position with regard to the anti-Iran resolution adopted by the IAEA. Ebrahim Raisi said Iran will not back off a single step from its position. Raisi said Iran's development in various sectors is not tied to its enemies' reproaches. Now, this after the UN Nuclear Agency approved a resolution accusing Tehran of inadequate cooperation. On Wednesday, the agency passed that resolution submitted by the U.S. and its three European allies. Iran condemned the move, saying the countries that push for the resolution put their agenda ahead of the agency's credibility.
The U.S. and its Western allies have pushed ahead with the anti-Iran hysteria at the International Atomic Energy Agency in Vienna. The UN nuclear watchdog's 35-nation Board of Governors overwhelmingly passed a resolution criticizing Iran for failing to explain uranium traces found at three undeclared sites. The resolution rebuked Iran for what it has described as Tehran's failure to answer questions on alleged uranium traces at undeclared sites. It also accuses Iran of insufficient cooperation with the agency. The resolution excludes a recommendation to refer Iran's case to the UN Security Council, a move that would significantly escalate tensions and likely sink the ongoing talks to revive the 2015 agreement. The resolution against Iran is said to have stemmed from information within two quarterly reports on the country's nuclear activities that were circulated amongst board members last week. Iran insisted it had declared all sites which hosted past nuclear activities. The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, Mohammad Islami, said Iran has no hidden or undocumented nuclear activities or undisclosed sites.
One of the main things to understand here is that the IAEA as an institution is meant to be, exactly as you said, a technical one. But now it is being used as a vehicle for political purposes, in order to pressure Iran, in order to continue the maximum pressure campaign that the Trump administration wanted, with the support of Israel, to isolate Iran.
These fake documents seek to maintain maximum pressure on Iran. The Israeli regime has openly called on the nuclear watchdog to censure Iran's nuclear program. In brazen remarks to the Knesset, the regime's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said Israel expected the IAEA's Board of Governors to strongly condemn Iran and make sure it will pay a heavy price.
So what we are seeing now is a campaign led by the United States, by Israel, and by European partners who promised that they would uphold the JCPOA and respect Iran and respect the deal and want to push America back into the deal. They are now turning around at the Board of Governors of the IAEA and pursuing this really regrettable, unfortunate, and downright dishonorable policy.
IAEA's resolution has drawn swift responses from Tehran. Iran has shut down two of the agency's cameras at just the site. The IAEA's director general says the Islamic Republic has informed the agency that it will remove 27 cameras in full, but that has not been verified by Iran. Now the IAEA and the West need to be carefully watchful, as Iran says there may be more to come as an action in response to the IAEA's resolution. It's unacceptable to continue cooperation while the other side does not behave properly.
In response to the IAEA's unconstructive approach, Iranian officials have now decided to remove two surveillance cameras of the International Atomic Energy Agency from one of its nuclear sites.
And Iran now, we know in the news, is saying that they will not, if the IAEA wants to do these kind of actions, Iran will reconsider its relationship with the IAEA. And I think it is well within its right to do so.
Tehran says the two cameras had been installed voluntarily and beyond the safeguard obligations of the IAEA. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, has hit back at the accusations, saying Tehran has given accurate answers to questions posed by the IAEA, but the agency bases its reports on the information provided by the enemies of Iran. Iran had earlier warned against the consequence of the unconstructive move by the US and Europeans to disrupt negotiations to salvage the multilateral deal, officially known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. Iran has warned that it would give appropriate response to hostile moves.
Israel is the main provocateur of this current situation. The Zionist regime is dedicated to seeing a war with Iran. They see it almost as a holy duty, and it's not only extremely dangerous and reckless, but it shows the rogue nature of the Zionist state and of its backers in Washington.
The resolution comes as a pause in the Vienna process entered its third month. Tehran blames the US and its allies France, Britain and Germany for failing to act constructively during the talks. Under the JCPOA, Iran accepted certain caps on its nuclear program in exchange for the removal of international sanctions. The US, however, unilaterally abandoned the deal in 2018 and reimposed sweeping sanctions despite Tehran's full compliance with its share of obligations.
Members of an anti-Iran terrorist group, the MKO, have attacked a reporter and accompanying news team of Press TVs while reporting on an exhibition held in Stockholm on the group's crimes. Bianca Rahimi tells us more.
This is the moment an exhibition turned into a series of violent assaults committed by the MKO, a cult-like organization that has the blood of 17,000 Iranians on its hands. Press TV's camera crew, reporting on an exhibition showcasing MKO bombings and assassinations, was attacked by angry supporters of the group.
Don't touch my camera. Don't touch my camera.
Go deep.
Don't touch my camera.
You go deep.
After being driven out of post-revolution Iran, the MKO based itself in Camp Ashraf in Iraq, where members were forced to pledge allegiance to its leader Massoud Rajavi and demonstrate that allegiance with cult-like behavior. For women, that meant divorcing their husbands and marrying him. Many families spent years on the fringes of the camp begging for their children to be released, but to no avail. The camp was later dismantled in the wake of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Until 2012, the MKO was on the U.S. terrorist list. It was also blacklisted by the EU until 2009. Since being removed, the new leader of the cult, Mariam Rajavi, has forged close relationships with Western officials.
What unfolded on the streets of Stockholm today was a shocking reminder that the EU has become a safe haven for the MKO, which attacks journalists like myself with little fear of retribution. The question now is, will there be an investigation? Bianca Rahimi, Stockholm.
Earlier, we were joined by historian and social activist Olsi Jazikci. He says members of the MKO group have a long history of terrorist activity against democratic institutions and free speech.
This is not the first attack that the MKO is doing against the free media. They have a longer history of terrorist activities and attack against democratic institutions. The Mujahideen al-Halq terrorist organization, in the past they have even killed American officials, and the very nature of this cult is against democracy and free speech. Since their coming or their massive coming to Albania in 2016, the Mujahideens, they have attacked dozens of Albanian journalists and medias. They have attacked and beaten journalists from Channel 4, a British channel, and they have verbally abused and attacked The Guardian, The Independent, the BBC, and Al Jazeera. So what happened today in Sweden is nothing new from this cult. This cult, they do not accept debate, they do not accept opposing views, because they live in a totalitarian cult-like society. For people who know the organization of the Mujahideen al-Halq cult in Albania, they know that these people, they abuse even their own members. Their members, who are held as slave soldiers in Albania, they are not allowed to contact their families, they are not allowed to surf the internet, or they are not even allowed to communicate with the outside world.
The Palestinian resistance movement Islamic Jihad has condemned the UAE for hosting the Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett in an official visit. A spokesperson for the movement says that UAE's insistence on normalizing ties with Israel means it is ignoring a Palestinian nation's sufferings at the hands of the regime. Bennett visited the UAE Thursday and held talks with the newly appointed Emirati president. There was no prior announcement of the trip, which was Bennett's second to the United Arab Emirates, which normalized ties with Israel in a U.S. brokered deal back in 2020. Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco were other nations to follow suit, which caused an outcry in the Muslim world, with Palestinians calling the move a stab in the back. There's no end in sight to gun violence in America. Police say at least three people have been killed in the latest shooting incident in Smithsburg. That's a town in Washington County in Maryland. The shooting occurred inside a manufacturing facility. Locals say a suspect was shot and injured during an exchange of fire with police. Later, police said the suspect was no longer a threat. Now, gun violence comes as three other cities are still grieving from mass shootings. Recently, at least 35 people were killed in separate incidents in Buffalo, New York, at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, and a medical office building in Tulsa, Oklahoma. U.S. stocks plunge ahead of a key government report on soaring consumer prices and after the European Central Bank joins the Federal Reserve in the battle against inflation. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 2%, while the broad-based S&P Index dropped about 2.5%. The tech-rich NASDAQ Composite Index also shed nearly 1% in Thursday's trading. That's as all eyes are now focused on the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index for May, which is expected to be out Friday. The data is likely to show another big jump in annual inflation. Rising inflation has prompted the European Central Bank to join a growing number of central banks to cease easy money policies. The U.S. Federal Reserve started raising interest rates in March. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned that the impacts of the war in Ukraine on food security, energy, and finance is severe and speeding up. He stressed urgent action has to be taken to save lives of those vulnerable around the world. Ramatola Bagban reports from Kabul.
We are visiting Afghan food markets, where prices are hiking day by day. Food items are short, and people don't have cash to buy them. Customers here tell us about their struggle to provide food and livelihoods.
If I save the whole salary of my 20 days of work, I will be able to buy a sack of flour because I hardly can make only a dollar per day. However, most of the days, I'm without a job. In such a situation where prices are also skyrocketing, I can no longer provide livelihoods for my family.
On Wednesday, the UN chief said the impacts of the war in Ukraine have generated food and finance crises globally, with vulnerable ones being hit hard. Afghan experts say Afghanistan is among the countries affected harshly.
Previously, the prices of food items, including that of flour, were lower. Since the beginning of Russia-Ukraine conflict, the prices have started to rise. Then a sack of flour was $17, but now it is nearly $30. Unfortunately, our country is also facing an unprecedented drought that has a significant role in food shortages.
In the meantime, Afghan traders and businessmen also complain about the severe impacts of freezing Afghan assets by the U.S. and global sanctions on the country.
The U.S. seizing of Afghan assets has left a severe effect on our markets and livelihoods. Earlier, a dollar was exchanged with 77 Afghanis, but now, due to U.S. sanctions, a dollar has been raised to 89. We urge the U.S. and the international community to not add to the miseries of Afghan people and free their frozen funds as soon as possible.
Following the Taliban takeover, the U.S. and allies froze some $9 billion in Afghan central bank assets, and major funding to the country was halted. Sanctions and ripple effects from the war in Ukraine have triggered food crisis in Afghanistan. Most people here say they can afford a single sack of flour, since the prices have more than doubled. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Perhaps a full boycott of the UK Book Festival is necessary, says Kit Clanderenberg, journalist, in an article published under the heading UK Book Festival Bows to Israeli Lobby. Stay tuned for more. The head of a major British cultural event has bowed to a smear campaign against Palestine solidarity activists. Opening on June 24th, the Bradford Literature Festival takes place in Northern England city, where many local people have protested against the Zionist regime's crimes. Simia Aslam, the festival's founder, has effectively sought to distance herself from public opinion. In October last year, she took part in an online conference organized by B'nai B'rith, a lobby group, an apologist for Israel's colonization of the West Bank and its attacks on Gaza. Aslam used the occasion to suggest that people moved by the plight of Palestinians have ulterior motives. Her comments accommodated efforts by B'nai B'rith and similar groups to conflate opposition to the Zionist regime's oppression of Palestinians with anti-Jewish bigotry. Although the Zionist regime has erected an apartheid system with support from Britain and the US, Aslam referred to conflicts that are going on, which she claimed can actually become sort of lightning rods for the issues. Aslam did not spell out what issues she meant. Yet her comments were clearly in response to a question about anti-Semitic actions, albeit without examples of such actions being cited. There is a lot that gets vested into, say, the Israel-Palestine conflict, and I don't think the understanding is always there when that is happening, she said, adding, I think a lot of emotions come into that. I am not sure those issues always have to do with that particular conflict itself. Material promoting the Bradford Festival claims it will bring an amazing array of world-class writers to the area. Some of the writers scheduled to appear at the 10-day event are firmly entrenched in the British establishment. Among them are Alistair Campbell, director of press for Tony Blair when he was Britain's prime minister. Campbell, according to the festival program, will be speaking about the big political moments of the past few decades, from Brexit to the pandemic. There is no mention of an arguably bigger political moment, the Anglo-American War against Iraq. That illegal invasion was enabled by an infamous Dodgy dossier that Campbell played a major role in drafting. The dossier contained blatant lies about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. In truth, those weapons did not exist. Campbell and Blair have never been brought to justice for selling a war based on lies. The sponsors of the Bradford Festival include the Aspen Institute UK. Headquartered in Washington, the Aspen Institute is closely associated with the Crown family. Lester Crown, an industrialist and real estate mogul, is a life trustee of the Institute and father of its current chair, James Crown. The Institute has a formal alliance with the Anti-Defamation League, a leading pro-Israel group in the U.S. Both organizations run a fellowship program ostensibly aimed at nurturing future leaders. Lester Crown, meanwhile, is a broad member of the Jerusalem Foundation, which undertakes construction work in East Al-Quds, where the Zionist regime is actively displacing Palestinians. He's also known to have raised funds for Friends of the IDF, a group that assists the Zionist regime's forces of occupation. Another sponsor of the Bradford Festival is the magazine Jewish Renaissance. David Dangor, the president of the magazine Jewish Renaissance, is a key player in the Exilarch Foundation, supposedly a vehicle for charitable donations. It finances some of Britain's main pro-Israel groups, as well as the Henry Jackson Society, a neoconservative and anti-Muslim think tank, a website promoting the philanthropy of the Dangor family, describes David as a strong believer in strengthening UK-Israeli ties, who funds activities aimed at advancing the relationship. The Bradford Literature Festival was approached for comment but had not responded at the time of publication. The festival has been previously embroiled in controversy. In 2018, many Muslim artists withdrew from that year's lineup in protest. The protest was in response to revelations that organizers had received undisclosed funds from the UK Home Office's Building a Stronger Britain Together program, a counter-extremism initiative predominantly targeting Muslims. Just as discriminating against people based on their religion or ethnicity is responsible and reprehensible, Samia Aslam must be challenged over her catering to the pro-Israel lobby, which is dedicated to perpetuating an apartheid system. Perhaps a full boycott of the festival is necessary.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, let us contemplate on a saying from Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him, the Holy Prophet's eighth infallible heir. The evilest of people is that who deprives others of his aid, eats alone, and lashes his bondman.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-purification as agent of development. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of self-purification as agent of development. We know that there is no doubt that if one wants to follow definite principles in life, whether of a religious or a non-religious character, one must adopt a well-defined approach. In order to adopt a well-defined approach, it is essential to select a single goal and move in a single direction. Hence, one must avoid desultory involvements that may suit one's passing desires but are contrary to one's principles and goals in life. Self-control and self-discipline is essential in life for every man who wants to lead a human and rational existence. Therefore, when we look at the man, it is a being equipped with the power of intellect and possessing unlimited desires. We have unlimited desires that we follow, the wishes that we have, and therefore, on the other hand, when we have the power of intellect, we need to use these both in a way that we can reach to a development and the self-purification. Therefore, man's perfection and greatness does not depend on physical matter, which can affect his experience only on a sensible plan. But on the other hand, we have the innate, we have the fitra, we have something which is related to the soul, and we need to think about that, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of self-purification as agent of development, and we said that the human beings, obviously, they have the material life, they have the physical and the aspect of the matter, and on the other hand, we have soul as well. When we look at the self-purification and we say that it is the agent of development, self-purification is not something related to the physical matter. It is related to spiritual matter. And when we look at the self-purification, then we see that a man's real perfection lies in his liberating himself from the straits of illusory lusts and physical pleasures and in advancing on the path of humanity by edifying his sensibilities, disciplining himself, and becoming acquainted with higher ideas and a wider horizon. Therefore, we see that his goals and his perfection lies in the soul, in the spiritual journey, in something which is immaterial, which cannot be seen. And through the material and the physical factor, he cannot reach to the perfection. Yes, he can use these physical matters or the physical abilities that he has, this material world, as the tool of reaching to perfection. But obviously, he cannot rely on the physical matter only, as there are some people who deny the religion, who deny the God, who talk about the material world, and they want to, and they're trying to prove the existence of the world on the basis of material, as the philosophers in the West has done. But what they do about the immaterial factors, what they do about the things that are not fit, that are not physical, and we cannot see them. Therefore, we need to have this self-purification with the help of soul, with the help of purification, with the help of having some ethical rituals so that we can have this purification, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
China launches three astronauts to its Tiangong space station as its construction enters a critical phase. The three blasted off from a launch center in northwestern China. They are the second group of astronauts to head to the space station since its construction began in April 2021. They will stay there for 6 months. The space station is planned as a three-section structure. The core module was launched in April, and two more components will be sent into space in July and September. The new mission will oversee the integration of the three parts. The crew's commander has described the task as a pivotal battle in the construction of Tiangong, which is planned to be completed by the end of 2022. Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there will be many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warn that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. If the station is established successfully, it will replace the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. It will be the world's highest of its kind, according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has curated these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A man in the city of Soran in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region has become a local celebrity for a rather peculiar feature on his face. Hussein Abdullah Ahmed is famous for a record-breaking length of his mustache. Ahmed has been going by the name Mr. Mustache for decades now. His mustache has reached a length of 2.4 meters, making him a well-known man in the city he hails from. His son says, however, that his father's unusual feature is nothing new for him.
I've always known my father likes this since I was born. Although there were times when I had seen his moustache short, my dad is famous for his moustache, and we're proud of him.
Ahmed admits his moustache troubles him while working on the farm or trying to sleep, but to avoid the trouble, he either ties it from behind or stuffs it under his clothes. The 73-year-old man is not planning to get rid of his facial hair, which he hasn't trimmed since 1994. He seems to be enjoying the ride of fame as people stop him on the streets to take selfies with him.
The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of this show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, this just amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways. That the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, 3D projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales. Chilean scientists believe they have found the world's oldest living tree in a lush green forest in the south of the country. The scientists say their study shows an ancient cypress known as the Great Grandfather might have been beaten the record for the world's oldest tree by six centuries. The bristlecone pine tree in eastern California is the current record holder with over 4,800 years of age. The scientist who led the study says the sample they extracted and other dating methods suggest that the Chilean cypress with a 4 meter thick trunk is over 5,000 years old.
We could count all the rings, but we know it's not the tree's age. It's an estimation of what we call a minimum age. So for this kind of tree, the scientific challenge is to estimate with science the part that we do not see and that is missing. And that is what we did with the millennial Alersi. This method tells us that 80% of all possible growth trajectories give us an age of this living tree greater than 5,000 years. There's only a 20% chance that the tree is younger.
Borichevich is, however, concerned about visitors harming the tree, which is located in the Costero National Park. He says visitors are still able to circle the tree's base, step on its roots, and even take pieces of its bark. The tree is a conifer native to Chile and Argentina and can grow to heights of up to 45 meters.
Humans have disrupted the turtle survival for years due to their greed for meat, eggs, skin and shells. But the decreasing population of the species is creating conscious of conservation. Cambodians have released hundreds of turtles of an endangered variety into the wild on World Turtle Day. About 600 Cantor's giant soft-shell turtles were let into a river in northeastern Cambodia. After people collected the species from a holding pool, Cambodian monks blessed the tiny creatures, then set them free. The Wildlife Conservation Society was the organizer of this event. It said that only a few records of Cantor turtles have remained in Laos, while they have mostly been wiped out in Vietnam and Thailand. The body has so far released over 1,500 hatchlings into the wild in 2022. The world's oldest living man has just turned 113 years and says he is going to be around at least 10 more years. Good for him. Born on May the 27th, 1909, in Venezuela, Juan Vicente Perez Mora is still in pink of his health and memory and does not take medication. He has no trouble recalling his childhood marriage and the names of his siblings, children, and grandchildren. He has 41 grandchildren, by the way. So what is the secret behind a long life? Work hard, rest on holidays, go to bed early, love for God, and always carry him in your heart. The Guinness World Records declared Perez Mora the oldest living person last week.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Four corporations control 90% of the baby formula market in the United States. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written jointly by Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan writers. This article is published under the heading "The U.S. Corporate Monopolies Who Stole the Baby's Formula." Here's the story. Last October, a whistleblower sent the FDA a report detailing safety and sanitation violations at the Abbott Nutrition Factory in Sturgis, Michigan, the largest baby formula manufacturing plant in the U.S. It would be months before the FDA took action. Abbott fired the whistleblower. Four babies who had consumed formula from the plant suffered bacterial infections. Two of them died. The FDA could not conclusively link the illnesses or deaths to the plant. In February, Abbott shut down the plant and announced a voluntary recall of its Sturgis-manufactured baby formula. The FDA followed with a product warning. The life-threatening formula shortage was not due to a natural disaster or circumstances beyond Abbott's control. Rather, it is a predictable outcome of corporate greed, a cover-up, and a captured regulatory agency. Four Four corporations control 90% of the baby formula market in the United States. Abbott Labs, which produces Similac, leads with 40%, followed by Rickett, which makes Enfamil and Lysil at 30% of the market. The Biden administration is facing mounting criticism for its delay in addressing the Sturgis plant's health and safety concerns and for failing to anticipate the formula shortages caused by the plant's closure. In many cases, infant formula is a vital necessity, providing life-saving nutrition for thousands of babies in the U.S., for whom breastfeeding is not possible due to allergies, immune conditions, or other situations. Parents of color are more likely to use formula in the first 3 months of an infant's life than white parents. The whistleblower report was received by the FDA in October. But the whistleblower was not interviewed until December. The whistleblower's report was released publicly last month in a House Appropriations Committee hearing chaired by Democratic Congressmember Rosa DeLauro. The report stated lax practices, including regulatory violations, were consistently overlooked and described a pervasive fear of retaliation for those who dared to rock the boat. Following the hearing, DeLauro said in a statement, "The FDA is a regulatory agency, period. It is about time they acted like one." David Dayen, executive editor of the American Prospect, explained how these few large corporations obtain their power over the infant formula market with the help of an essential federal program, speaking on the Democracy Now! News Hour. Quote, "The reason is that we have a program called Women, Infants, and Children, the WIC program, and about half of all formula passes through that program and goes to poor families. It's very well-intentioned. The government gets very large discounts for purchasing formula and getting it to poor families. But each state does a competitive bidding process with a formula company. And in exchange for those volume discounts, they get market exclusively. So what you end up having is these little monopolies in all 50 states," unquote. Formula is critical for the proper nutrition of many babies, but is generally considered less beneficial than breastfeeding. The Lancet Medical Journal issued a comprehensive series on the benefits of breastfeeding in 2016, finding that the deaths of 823,000 children and 20,000 mothers each year could be averted through universal breastfeeding, along with economic savings of $300 billion. The series confirms the benefits of breastfeeding in fewer infections, increased intelligence, probable protection against overweight and diabetes, and cancer prevention for mothers. Breast milk, the series concludes, makes the world healthier, smarter, and more equal. David Dayen, in his book, Monopolized, Life in the Age of Corporate Power, describes how the U.S. regime has bullied countries in the global south that try to promote breastfeeding over formula. At a 2018 meeting of the UN-affiliated World Health Assembly, Ecuador's proposed resolution to protect, promote, and support breastfeeding was gutted by the U.S. delegation, which threatened to withhold aid to any nation opposing the U.S. stance. The U.S. delegates, Diane writes, were operating on behalf of the $70 billion deeply concentrated global baby formula industry. After signing a long-delayed